This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Union workers from around the Ohio Valley are urging Congress to shore up shaky multi-employer pension plans that support hundreds of thousands of retirees. Lawmakers explored the issue at a recent field hearing in Ohio. As Becca Schimmel reports, senators warned of dire effects on the economy if major pension plans fail.
United Mine Workers President Cecil Roberts fired up a crowd of union workers fighting for their pension benefits at a rally in Ohio.
When the people get to marching, the politicians get to listening.
The Joint Select Committee on Pensions is holding hearings to learn more about problems with the multi-employer pension programs, including a field hearing in Columbus. The United Mine Workers pension plan could face insolvency if no action is taken, and it isn't the only plan in trouble. Teamsters, iron workers, carpenters, and others fear their pensions are shaky. And committee member Senator Rob Portman of Ohio warned that even if one of the larger plans becomes insolvent, that could put the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation at risk as well.
That wave of bankruptcy has the potential to create an economic contagion effect. In other words, it would spread around our economy.
Mine workers had hoped that a bipartisan bill would address problems with both their pensions and health benefits. But as it made its way through Congress, the bill was split and only health care benefits were secured. West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin later introduced a bipartisan bill to shore up the pension plans for more than 43,000 coal miners in Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia, but the bill hasn't gotten any traction. Manchin says if multi-employer pensions are allowed to become insolvent, it could hit the whole U.S. economy hard.
This one could take us down quicker and faster and harder than anything that's faced the United States since the Great Depression. I truly believe that. And I see it. I see this train wreck coming. I see the light in the tunnel, and it is sure as hell not the daylight on the other side.
Larry Ward is a retired coal miner and former president of his local union. He told the committee that a wave of coal company bankruptcies left more of the pension obligation on fewer employers. Existing companies are responsible for contributing to pension plans for people that worked for the now orphaned companies.
I think it's well known 80% of our retirees and or widows are from orphaned companies. Failure on this part of this committee to act now, our pension fund will go insolvent.
Ward says one more downturn in the coal market could push the UMW plan into insolvency. Employers in other industries are looking at similar problems. David Gardner is the CEO of Alfred Nichols Bakery in Ohio. His employees are part of the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers Union.
Why should our company have to fund the pensions of people who never worked for Nichols Bakery?
Gardner says his company was turned down for loans because of the unfunded pension liability. Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio says there are more than 60,000 active workers and retirees in his state who could lose their pensions if nothing is done.
It threatens our economy. It affects every American in every state in this country. It affects union workers. It affects non-union workers.
Brown has introduced a bill to establish a system in the Treasury Department for pension plans to borrow enough to remain solvent. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Becca Schimmel in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. You know those historic metal plaques that set along West Virginia roadways and describe historic events or stories behind towns and communities? Imagine that same idea, but in a digital version. A history professor at Marshall University, with the help of Huntington Software Company, created a mobile app and website called Cleo to provide a guide to historic sites and stories throughout the Mountain State and the U.S. As Molly Bourne reports, Cleo was recently honored by the National Humanities Alliance in Washington, D.C.
Let's say you pull into Williamson, West Virginia. That's where I live. And you stumble upon the Tug Valley Chamber of Commerce. It's a huge black building in downtown, also known as the Coal House, because it's made, you guessed it, of coal. The idea is if you actually have cell service down here, you'll call up this app on your phone. When I stand in front of the Coal House, this is what I hear.
One of the region's most unique landmarks, the house that Coal built is now a local history museum with exhibits that feature local artifacts.
This voice is from Cleo, a free history guide app and website named after the Greek muse of history.
The museum experience is what I'm trying to create.
That's David Trowbridge, a history professor at Marshall University, who created the app and website.
I'm trying to create the Digital Museum of America, this platform where you can go explore a town as if it was a museum, as if the physical place became a museum where every building, landmark, historical marker, place where something happened is an artifact, just waiting for you to explore it.
Trowbridge is so passionate about this project, he started it 5 years ago with $10,000 of his own money. Clio is location-based and now includes more than 30,000 original historical notes from sites across the country. The Discover function calls up nearby landmarks and their distance away. Its contributors are crowdsourced and verified, often from local libraries or historical societies. There are also 370 walking tours, 18 in West Virginia. Trowbridge specializes in African-American history, and he created one tour in Huntington that celebrates the achievements of Black residents and recalls their struggles there. But what sets this app apart from Google or Wikipedia?
You can Google things, but you can't Google what you don't know you're looking for. You can't Google search, oh, that monument I passed. This is sort of a search engine when you don't know what you're searching for, which brings back that magic and joy of discovery.
Plus, he says, the contributors are often locals themselves. Last week, Clio was among the education humanities projects that received national honors. The National Humanities Alliance in Washington, D.C. just launched Humanities for All, a database of more than 1,400 higher ed humanities projects during the past decade. Clio was one of 51 innovative projects that the Alliance profiled. Daniel Fisher is the Humanities for All project director.
It's enriching life in the university and in the community, and so including Clio was a very easy choice. It's a marvelous project and a wonderful gift from David Trowbridge and Marshall to the country.
The app was designed by Strictly Business, a Huntington software company. It's free to users, but costs Trowbridge a few $1,000s a month to maintain, and it's supported by foundations and donations. Clio's content is stronger in Huntington, Charleston, and other cities than down here in the southern coalfields. But through a matching grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, Trowbridge plans to hire Marshall students to conduct research throughout West Virginia to add more sites to the app. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Molly Bourne in Williamson.
The dog and horse racing industries have played a major role in West Virginia's economy since the mid-1930s. But in recent years, whether these industries fit into the state's economic future is something that's been debated at the State House. As Liz McCormick reports, those who support the racing industry are fighting to see it survive, while others say it doesn't bring in revenue like it once did.
All right, tie on, riders.
Five thoroughbred horses spring from the gates in a nighttime race at the Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races in Charlestown. Thoroughbred horse racing in West Virginia began here in 1933 when Charlestown Races first opened.
Hey, Lauren.
Jefferson County is also home to the oldest thoroughbred breeding farm in the state, O'Sullivan Farms.
So this is the stallion barn with the offices conjoined in the front.
That's John Funkhauser. He's the farm manager and co-owner of O'Sullivan Farms in Charlestown. Many of the horses born and raised here go on to race at the Hollywood Casino or other racetracks around the world. This farm was founded in 1939 by John's great-grandfather, who then passed it on to John's grandparents.
At the end of the 40s, early 50s, there was a dispersal. My grandparents got divorced. My grandmother, that's when she actually came out to the farm where we are now, and she bought this farm with her own money to basically to start her own farm.
His grandmother wasn't alone, though. She had support from her family and from other horse racing enthusiasts in Charlestown, and the farm grew. Today, John, his brother Joe, and their parents keep the place going along with the help from 6 to 12 employees.
Now we're walking into our big broodmare barn where we just had our very last foal of the year.
The Funkhausers have seen hundreds of horses go in and out of their gates over the past 8 decades, and several have been champion racers. Today they have 8 stallions, 42 broodmares, 46 yearlings and foals, and nearly 150 acres of farmland. About one of every 4 horses living on the farm belongs to outside clients from all over the country.
There's so much beauty in raising these horses and having these babies. You know, there's so much satisfaction as well, you know, when you put in the long hours that we do. Year in, year out, day in, day out. It's just when you finally get that horse that you've been raising and breeding and planned out so meticulously for 5 years, and it's finally starting and it does well, you know, there's not much more gratifying than that.
But it's a tough industry and it's expensive. A horseman family like the Funkhausers rely heavily on state funding to keep their operation going. State funds pay for things like feeding and caring for the horses, helping to pay bet winnings, paying a jockey, or other staff. The state's racing industry is supported in a variety of ways, but the West Virginia legislature supports the industry mainly through three accounts: the Greyhound Breeding Development Fund, the Thoroughbred Development Fund, and the Purse Fund. The Purse Fund is the biggest, but has dropped over the years, from about $75 million 4 or 5 years ago to about $40 million in 2018. These three accounts are directly linked to how well a casino performs each year. And given the decline in casino revenue, some lawmakers question the remaining investment in the racing industries. Those in support, though, argue horse and dog racing at the state's four casinos are key to keeping those casinos competitive with surrounding states. The Funkhausers and others in the racing industry constantly worry funding support from the state will continue to dwindle.
Every year for the last 8 years, we've gotten less and less money from that we've been promised. You know, it's not like, you know, they're just giving it to us. No, this is written in the bill. We've been promised this. But because you've got, a legislature that doesn't fully understand the industry, they've taken a successful industry that was hugely successful 7-8 years ago, and now it's on the brink of collapsing.
The 2017 state legislative session was a tough budget year with a $450 million shortfall. It was that year budget allocations for several industries, including the Greyhound Breeding Development Fund, were almost eliminated. Concerns over the same thing happening to the Thoroughbred Development Fund were also felt that year. During the most recent regular session, though, continued funding for the state's two racing industries was not in jeopardy. There was even a bill to help them get more money. That bill passed unanimously in the state Senate, but didn't make it out of the House Finance Committee. Jefferson County Delegate Riley Moore is passionate about the horse racing industry in his region, and he hopes to see state funding for the racing industries restored back to a more competitive place. He argues the industry is good for West Virginia, that it supports green space, tourism, and boosts the economy.
As important as the coal industry is to other parts of the state, that is the level of importance the horse racing industry, the thoroughbred industry, is for Jefferson County and the Eastern Panhandle writ large. That is our coal industry here. That is the long-term, long-time industry that is one of our biggest employers here. So it's certainly, I think, huge for the area and huge also for the state of West Virginia.
But other lawmakers think it's a bad investment because it doesn't bring in enough revenue for the entire state like it did in previous decades. Delegate Eric Nelson, the House Finance Chairman, says he's sympathetic to the struggle of the racing industries, but says the industry is declining and fewer people are physically attending races. So in tough budget years, he says state funding can't always be guaranteed.
It's a big balancing act. It means more to some of those districts and whatnot that actually see the full component of that. But then there are many other areas of state that don't get the full benefit or see the full benefit of that. And there's concerns about the priorities of dollars and where they should go.
An economic impact study done by West Virginia University in 2012 does indicate declines in attendance has affected the amount of cash going into those funds, impacting the level of state revenue accrued each year. The report says the industry brings in roughly $4.5 million in total state tax revenue annually. It also indicates the thoroughbred and greyhound racing industries in West Virginia contribute more than $320 million in total business volume to the state's economy. That's 7,300 jobs, which is about 10% of employment in West Virginia's leisure and hospitality sector. A newer economic impact study has not been done. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Charlestown.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.